Welcome to our Saturday simulcast. It's been a while since I've talked to Brian, but I'm going to talk to him here. And this is, of course, our April 27th edition. I want to thank our sponsor, the Union Club Hotel, Boiler Up Bar, 811 Bistro, Leaps Coffee. It's all there for you. And we thank Vicki Wicks and company, too, for their support over the years. And Brian has been used to, he has a regular line about where they're going to build their next Union Club Hotel. I'll leave that to him. That's his calling card as they sponsor us throughout his rap videos. But Brian, obviously, it is now AAU time and going an opportunity to go out and see some of the guys that you're going to be looking at over the summer. Saturday, the day that this airs, April 27th, you'll be down in Indianapolis. Just kind of give us a little bit of overview of what you're going to be covering here over the next couple of weeks and what's the focus from your perspective.
From a recruiting perspective, there's really not a whole lot. Like, Purdue's in an incredibly fortunate position here where they're probably like they're one of the very, very few coaching staffs in college basketball right now who's not scrambling to put together a roster next year, which is a pretty incredible luxury. Purdue has one scholarship to fill in 2025 in their high school class. So there's really not a whole lot to do here, which is, you know, a little bit of a backhanded deal because you're never going to be as hot as you are right now after you just went to the national title game, but there's nothing you can do with it except for the 2026 class coming up. So it'll really help Purdue moving forward with younger guys, but in terms of the very short-term additions to the program, there's really not a whole lot to do here because Purdue's roster next year is not just full, but beyond full for the time being, and there's only the one spot in 2025. Trent Sicily is the only guy that I'm aware of Purdue is actively recruiting for 2025, so I'm going to go down and see and talk to him after Purdue went down to have an in-home visit with him on Monday, and then I think it was Monday.
I think it was Monday. Yeah,
whatever
you reported. Yeah,
whatever. and then just some 2026 guys as well. So we'll start covering recruiting here in the next couple weekends, and then kind of go from there into the off season. So you know, Purdue's got a couple weeks off here, I'd imagine, and then they'll be back at it, and I'll see if I can get out there for early practices in June to a certain extent. But so we'll just start with recruiting, and there's not a whole hell of a lot to cover, but we'll cover whatever we can.
Take us through, though, how you go about, because now you're looking at 2026 guys, and you start to, when you go to events like you're going to on Saturday, do you start to uncover who some of the best prospects are, who Purdue's recruiting, what is your workflow, I guess I should say, when you get to these things and you're looking at kids?
Well, Purdue does a pretty good job getting on their guys early, identifying their guys early, getting them on campus. Purdue has enough cachet now where they can get an audience with young players very much more easily than they probably could 15 years ago. So you have a pretty good idea who's interested, who they're really prioritizing. Obviously things are always subject to change, especially nowadays, but I think there's probably a half dozen guys you know Purdue's absolutely positively locked into. So just kind of getting to see those guys play so I can credibly tell our readers what they're all about and what they're good at and how they might fit in long term, but also just kind of seeing how things are going to unfold for them in their recruitments and whatnot. So there's a few guys in 2026 right now who are clearly established guys. Tay Kinney is one of them, the guard from the Cincinnati area, should be at this thing Saturday. Jonathan Sanderson's a guy from Michigan whose dad now works at Vanderbilt, has been a guy that's been pretty established for a long time. Anthony Thompson is from Ohio, a wing. He'll be at this thing tomorrow, Saturday, I should say. Today.
Today.
So it's pretty evident who the first wave of guys is going to be. Now, obviously, as time goes by, Purdue has a whole summer here to go find more guys to recruit, but just that first wave of guys, that's why, people in recruiting talk about plan A guys, plan B guys, things like that. That's not really a thing. This first wave of guys are obviously going to be priorities, but Purdue's opinions on these guys could also change. I've seen it 1,000 times over the years where Purdue offers a guy early, and by the end of the process, Purdue ends up prioritizing other guys or just walking away from them altogether. I think you saw that in the last class. I think Travis Perry at the very end of the process was a player that, Purdue liked, but Purdue couldn't take. If had he called Purdue and said, "I want to come," I don't know if Purdue could have taken him. That kid ends up at Kentucky, by the way. So that tells you
Where
now,
Purdue is.
obviously, that there were some circumstances there too. But it's a pretty long process. It's a pretty eventful process typically. But this part of it now is just kind of the first floor, the first, second, third inning, so to speak.
I should know this, but I'm woefully unprepared. Do you have any clue of how many in 26 Purdue will be replacing? Have to even go through the who will be gone by that time. Will they have it? Will it be much of a class
Well,
in terms of that would.
that would be the Braden Smith, Fletcher Lawyer, Trey Kaufman Wren
That's right. That's because those guys will be juniors next
class.
year. Yeah,
So
so at
that'll be
least
a
three
big
spots.
class. It'll be an important class. It'll be a big class, but scholarships are just a figment of our imagination these days anyway. Numbers don't exist. In college basketball, numbers don't exist anymore. It's just theory. It's just a figment of our imagination. So Purdue is relatively insulated from that more so than everyone else in college basketball right now, but that could change very quickly for all we know. Purdue does a good job getting guys who are not going to transfer, provided things work out, and Purdue has a pretty good way of going about things where things typically work out for guys. So I think the chaos that is college basketball right now is something Purdue's a little bit insulated from. I don't think anyone's completely insulated from it, but planning too far ahead is really not something anyone in college basketball can afford to do right now, because it's just everything is day to day with transfers on top of all the traditional stuff like injuries and things like that. But that should be a big class and an important class when you look at the guys Purdue's going to have to start backfilling already. It seems like Braden Smith and Fletcher Lawyer just got to Purdue because they
It's
did.
impossible, yeah.
But it is something where you're constantly having to plan for after your best players leave. And obviously this class Purdue's bringing in this year with six guys is going to be a really big one. But you have to go out and find your next horses too. And between Braden Smith, Fletcher Lawyer, Trey Kaufman Wren, those are three outstanding players that you're going to have to be replacing here. It's never too early to start thinking about that. So that's exactly what this summer is about with that 2026 class, and probably even beyond that. And Purdue's going to do it through the high school ranks. They're going to keep doing what they've always been doing. Will there come a year where they have to pop in one last piece? Yeah, of course. Is it possible that one of these years somebody transfers, somebody gets hurt, you have to, and the portal becomes inevitable? Yes. You look at what happened this year with Lance Jones. That's the model now for Purdue, is you have your core through the high school ranks, and every now and then you have that one season where you got to pop in one guy. And that one guy was necessary because, Brandon Newman left. Brian Waddell gets hurt early in his career, creates maybe a little bit of a vacuum too, that ripples down the line into a situation where you need somebody from the portal. The whole point guard situation there was up in the air. You had to take David Jenkins just to fill a roster spot, and then you have to replace him, and you get somebody who fits your team really well. The whole Lance Jones thing was the best case scenario outcome for
Sure.
Purdue in the portal. There's just no way around that. Purdue is not going to be a team like these other teams right now who are getting all their best players out of the transfer market. Purdue ultimately is going to every now and then have to complement, supplement. It's whatever
That's the
mint,
correct word.
whatever
Supplement.
mint word you want to use. It's roster with final pieces, not center pieces.
It does that present the way UConn went about doing things and the way they're going to continue to do about doing things in teams like that, does that make it extra challenging? I mean, Purdue's got such a foundation. You've talked about that, written about it. Is this sustainable as you look for a national championship? Because, I guess maybe it's too early to tell, because you hope that if everybody keeps staying with you all these years, you're good if you're Purdue. But does that present a threat just if the winds change in terms of other schools being able to kind of pick and choose their portal guys and supplement them? And again, we use UConn as an example. There are others, but how do you view that? Does that put Purdue in a little bit of a risk, or do you think it's just that foundation's as solid as it can be moving forward?
I think everyone's at risk of everything all the time. You look at what just happened at Wisconsin, where, I don't know if Chucky Hepburn wanted to leave Wisconsin, but there comes that point in time where you're making this at one place, but this other place can offer you this, and it's life-changing money. Who's going to turn that down? To Greg Gard's credit, that's exactly what he said. Who in that situation is going to turn down like a $500,000 raise? At that age, that's life-changing money, especially when you consider where a lot of these players have come from. But I think for Purdue, it's a matter of, kind of get out in front of it on the front end. That's the one thing Matt Painter does really well as a head coach, and something that maybe people don't understand on the outside is he gets out in front of his problems on the front end so that they're not problems on the back end. And by getting the right guys and doing right by them and being honest with them and treating them well and all of that stuff. And the NIL stuff is okay at Purdue. I don't think anybody wants for really anything. It could always be better, but I think that the player experience at Purdue is good enough that guys aren't going to be running out the door. And I think Painter does a good job finding the guys who are motivated by the things that they'll experience at Purdue versus what they could get somewhere else. And I think that has sort of made Purdue a little bit of an outlier here, where you don't necessarily, you always have to worry about it, right? But
You never know for sure.
I don't think you're lying awake every night worrying about your guys getting bought by somebody else, things like that. I think the guys who are here at Purdue are Purdue sorts of guys who want to be at Purdue. They're good enough to play. A few of them are good enough to play anywhere in the country, but they're not necessarily motivated by the things that would draw them to other places in the country, if that makes sense.
It makes
Now,
sense.
there could come that p a point in time where, like last year, give Zach Edey some credit here. I mean, he could have gone to the NBA, but he also could have put his name in the portal. And somebody would have paid him $2 million to play 1 year of basketball, I bet you. There could always come that point in time where that sort of thing happens. I mean, that I think we would be naive to suggest that there aren't guys on this roster right now who haven't, had opportunities communicated to them to make a hell of a lot of money going somewhere else. That has not happened in large part because Purdue has a pretty unique group of guys here who, have the metal, to turn down that sort of thing. Who are in good situations right now. As I said before, Purdue's NIL situation's solid. It could always be better. That's sort of the one thing I think, Purdue would, if it wants for anything. I don't think it's anything facility related. I don't think it's anything, necessarily resource related. I think everybody wants their NIL situation to be better. Not because you want to go out and buy teams the way all these other teams are buying teams in the spring, but to take better care of the players in the program right now so that when you do have that kid who could be very marketable on an open market, it's not really something that your situation is so inferior that they're out looking for that or they're more receptive to that message. This is not really a huge issue at Purdue right now. It's something we have to talk about. It's something you always have to be mindful of. It has cost Purdue nothing. It has not affected Purdue adversely in any way, shape, or form. Football, it's gotten football. There's no question about that. It has gotten football. But Purdue basketball is a little bit of a different animal. It is in a very unique situation right here. It has found its guys. It has built its core. It has treated those guys in such a way that they want to be here to the point where they, if somebody offers them a few hundred grand to go somewhere else or a million to go somewhere else, whatever it might be, it's not something that they're going to really, really listen all that hard to. I don't want to, irresponsibly report things, but Purdue had a player last year who got offered a lot of money to leave, a lot of money. And his response was no, summarily out of hand. No, staying right here. As long as Matt Painter's here, I'm here. And that's a credit to Matt Painter finding guys who are completely aligned with what he is and what he the sort of program he runs and things like that. Now, that's a hard thing to do, and but it's something he's been really good at, and it's something he's going to continue to try to be really good at. Does the time come where you just kind of miss on some guys, or you get a really talented guy who is in totally in line with what you are as a program, who just needs the money, wants the money? That's entirely possible, yes. But for the time being, I think Purdue's got this core in place, and I think this core is pretty secure here. I think that that's a huge credit to Purdue's front end construction of this program and this roster.
Yeah, and the women also had Mary Ashley Stevenson. I don't know the whole deal there. What all the we don't cover that. Mike Carmen certainly does, and there's something to that whole situation too. So not a lot of anxiety with a lot of other coaches. There's a lot of anxiety over the next week or so as the transfer portal closes. It will be interesting. All right, the landscape of the Big Ten, and we're not necessarily going to. It has been, we've talked about Wisconsin, Indiana's made some. Made some moves financially and getting some big time players. I'm not asking you to necessarily evaluate the whole league, but just some things that are off the top of your head that have either not surprised you, but that will be factors when that league race when teams start facing one another late November here in 2024.
Well, let me ask you a question first. If I put a gun to your head and I said, name 15 Big Ten basketball players next year who don't play for Purdue, would you be able to do it?
You're asking the wrong guy. Yeah, Boo Booey is no longer playing, right? I know it'd be
Right.
hard. I mean, it's hard. Yeah, your point
That
is it's really
that's
hard.
and that that's not only the nature of the Big Ten, but the nature of college basketball right now is that this all. The thing about the Big Ten was it was always a continuity league where Iowa, Indiana, Purdue, all of these programs would bring in these guys as freshmen, and you'd watch them until they were good enough to go pro as juniors or in the modern era, freshmen or sophomores in some cases. But a lot of these guys got to their senior years, and that was the nature of the Big Ten. And now it's just every team turns over. Now it's going to happen when you have new coaching staffs. There's no way around that. But there are programs in the Big Ten now who are just going to do this every year. Illinois and Indiana have massive Illinois, NIL budgets, and they're just going to go out and buy new teams every spring. It's just the way it is. Ohio State's going to be a player in NIL every year and the transfer situation. And it's just the sport nowadays. So when we sit here and we have these conversations in April about the October or the November that's going to follow, all we can do is look at names on paper. And, I think what people are found out last year in a lot of senses and are going to find out every year from here on out is what a team looks like on paper after you sign them to their contracts, after you pay them all this money, and what you get in practice, figuratively and literally. Come fall are going to be two very different things. And the challenges of putting together the cohesive functional teams with a bunch of guys who meet for the first time in June is going to be really hard. Now, the way Purdue's doing it is going to expose you at times to these years where you're young when no one else is young.
Yeah.
But all of those older teams are going to be new. So there, you got to be really good at this from a coaching perspective to be able to put together a bunch of brand new 23-year-olds into a functional team every single year. How sustainable that's going to be for those people, I really have no idea. But from Purdue's perspective, the risk here lies in a situation where next year you have six freshmen when Illinois is going to have five new 25-year-olds,
Yeah.
24, 23,
With the
24,
COVID year,
25.
yep. The final
But
year, right?
that's what Purdue's been beating here the last 5 years. And you look at the last 5 years, and we had the graduate transfers before we had the transfer portal and the COVID year. So these teams were getting older and older every year because people are hoarding grad transfers. But if you look at the last 5 years in Purdue basketball history, have these been the best 5 years ever? Like
Hard to beat.
from a win total
As
perspective, from Big Ten championships?
the term is
Are you
ever
shaking your
because
head yes or no? Or are you?
I'm saying yes because you've never been number one 3 consecutive years, period. It is the best 5-year period in the history of Purdue basketball
So
without
as all
question.
these teams get older and older and older, right? And I go back to that Illinois team Purdue won in Champaign against on MLK Day a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
That team's starting lineup was older than the Bulls.
Yeah.
On average, no, I'm dead serious.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. Their starting five averaged an older player than the Chicago Bulls did. And that was before, you know, that was before the portal. That was before the COVID year, all that stuff. That's the landscape Purdue building through the high school ranks has had the most success ever in program history against. So there's no real reason to think that this is going to work against Purdue, but in theory, it is going to create these seasons where you're younger than everyone you're playing against,
Yeah.
which inherently is a disadvantage. That said, all of the people who are cobbling together these teams on the fly, you know, recruiting off lists, which let's be honest, that's what like Indiana and Illinois to a certain extent are doing. You don't have time. You don't have the ability to really sit down and meet with these guys and really assess them and really, really figure out, does this guy work with this guy? Does this guy work with that guy? What kind of system can we run that accentuates this guy's strength? You really have no idea. You're looking at a piece of paper with, okay, here's who's available. Here's how much they cost. What's your number? What do we need to get you? And then you're just going to the grocery store. You're taking a loaf of bread. You're taking, you know,
Hummus.
some cold cuts, you know, some
Okay.
condiments, and you're building a sandwich. But for all you know, you might as well have just bought wheat bread with like some sort of spicy turkey with some sort of disgusting hummus based. I have no idea. The sandwich might be disgusting. It might not be a delicious sandwich. Whereas if you, I've completely lost control of this. Let's just
That's
ignore the whole sandwich thing.
because I
What
threw hummus in there, though. I'm sorry for
you
doing
did.
that.
You completely
I
derailed me with the
love
hummus.
hummus.
I'm a big hummus fan. I would not put it on a sandwich.
Hummus wraps,
But
those
no,
are
what
hummus.
I'm trying to get at here is that it's just really hard to bring in these guys
Yeah.
knowing what you're getting into, knowing that you have to take these building blocks that might or may not even fit with one another and make them into something that's actually going to, you know, be sturdy. Whereas Purdue can, and those like Purdue can sort of pick their ingredients on the front end, sort of shape their ingredients to what they want as opposed to just having to build teams on their, you know, on the piece's terms as opposed to the program's terms.
Yeah.
It's just a really dangerous game. There's no right way to do this. There's no right way. There's no wrong way. There's two very different ways. So I don't want to sound like I'm vilifying the transfer model, because we don't have enough data yet to really say this does work or this doesn't work. When you look at the Final Four, though, you looked at two teams playing for the national title that built through continuity. But that being said, the two teams that joined them in the Final Four were mercenary programs. NC State, all transfers, Alabama, tons of transfers. So it's not like the difference between the people who kept people in their program and the people who just changed on the fly was all that great. And it's not like Lance Jones wasn't a difference maker for Purdue. It's not like Cam Spencer wasn't a difference maker for UConn.
Tristan
Tristan
Newton.
Newton,
Yeah.
obviously was a transfer before, the portal, so to speak, before the widespread musical chairs. So there's no real right way or wrong way. There's two very different ways, and both of them expose you to risk. But both of them have their pros and cons. It's just, Purdue has chosen its path. Other people have chosen their path, and we're just going to see who, I don't want to say who's right, but who does it better.
Yeah.
I think
And who
that's the
has
best
success
way
at
to
the end
put
of the
it.
day? Yeah.
It's going to be really interesting. I think Purdue has proven that its way works. I think that a lot of other people have shown that this their way can work. But you also saw a lot of teams last year that went portal heavy, who just, it didn't work. I think there was a point in time where, 19, 20 wins was a pretty decent year for a transition year. At Indiana, it was a disaster. I think Kansas, wasn't as good as people thought, in part because their portal stuff didn't work the way they sort of hoped it would. So it's going to be interesting to see not only who's better than everybody thinks they will be, but also who this just blows up on. And I think both of those things are on the table for everybody, no matter how they're doing it. It's just the most volatile time ever in college basketball right now.
We do know that Duke is going to be getting an outstanding individual in Mason Gillis, and trying to put that team, John Shire, putting that team together with a
Yeah.
guy like Mason's a good place to start. But they also have some pieces that they're going to try to fit. I wouldn't mind starting my, if I'm going to take a transfer that can fit in well, we know Mason will do that well there.
Well,
I did. Yeah, go
you
ahead.
just hope for his sake that he's not walking to a situation where he's just going to be a babysitter, where they can actually value him, and put him in positions to be a good player for him and win, because that's Cooper Flagg's team. It
Yeah.
just is. That team belongs to that recruiting class, and you hope Gillis gets a chance to, do what he, obviously will want to, do as a basketball player this year, and that's win. I'm sure they'll win to the level that he'll want to win, to the level he'll want to be involved and play and things like that, and have his voice resonate. You just hope that's why they're bringing him in, versus him just being a guy to help along or be a safety net for all of these young guys they're bringing in. It is a very unique situation. I always thought Mason Gillis, his value at Purdue really kind of came too from the fact that his continuity in the program, the leadership credibility he built up over the span of time, the complementary nature that his skill set and his game in general just sort of was amplified by those around him and vice versa. I think that was a really big deal for him at Purdue, and him walking into a new situation. I just hope he gets the experience out of this that, he was looking for, because
Yeah.
he certainly deserves it. He certainly earned it. You could not ask, Purdue could not have asked for a better, quote unquote, Boilermaker this year than Mason Gillis. This is the guy who could have honestly blown this whole thing up. I mean, this is a guy who earned the right to start and play 30 minutes a game, who had to defer to some other guys in some ways, and could have had a bad attitude about this and could have had a less than ideal attitude about this, but was awesome for team chemistry. He was awesome as a leader. He wanted this as much as anybody. And you have to give him immense credit for the intangible role he played for Purdue this year. And if he invests in Duke the way he invests in Purdue and vice versa, Duke got a really special guy. And
Yeah.
hopefully that value can project onto some of those younger guys. And he can sort of, end one thing for somebody and then start think something for somebody else. That would be the best case scenario for him. So, obviously, hope I'm sure everybody with an interest in Purdue is hoping for the very best for him, and he certainly earned it.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, last question. You had a chance to talk to Daniel Jacobson and also Cannon Catchings earlier this week. Just some any impressions or anything else that from those guys that you saw that made you think not any differently about them, but just what role they're going to play as they come into Matt Painter's program here next month or in June.
No, not really. I think that obviously next year is going to be a situation where Purdue's got its top five or six guys here established, but they're going to need some of those kids to come in and really, really help them. Now the guys I'd have earmarked for that, Jakari Harris would top that list because Purdue needs help in its backcourt. But Purdue's going to need somebody in their front court too. So whether it's Daniel Jacobson, Rollie Burgess, Cannon Catchings as a four man, we'll see where he even fits in positionally. There's going to be some opportunity there for some of these young guys to step into a onto an a fairly established team here, and really, really impact, have an opportunity to make an impact for this Purdue team. That said, I don't think Purdue needs somebody to be Braden Smith and Fletcher Loyer last year. I don't think Purdue, you might not even need somebody to be Camden Heidi and Miles Colvin this year. It is possible that you can ride five or six guys this year and still be really good, but it's just Jakari Harris, CJ Cox, whichever one, maybe both, have to give you that depth in your backcourt. And then somebody's going to have to carry some minutes in the front court too. But I don't think you need any of these six guys to come in and really light the world on fire. If somebody does, hey, great. If Cannon Catchings comes in and is, plays up to his rankings, if he's ready, from a maturity perspective to play up to
Right.
his billing, awesome. If Rollie Burgess or Daniel Jacobson are ready to come in and be your maybe not your backup center. I don't know. I have no idea what Purdue's going to do at center. My guess is Tre Coffman-Wren is probably the guy who starts there, gets all the offensive touches, but I don't know that for a fact. It's kind of an open deal. There's an opportunity there this summer for somebody to come in and really change the way we look at things. But my guess is they start with Coffman-Wren as their center. But that's all subject to change. All of those guys, I think Purdue is, has time on their side, and they'll redshirt a couple of these guys, I'm quite certain. But it is going to be a situation where you do need some of these guys to come in and play right away, most likely. They might not affect winning and losing as much as some of the guys you've had before have, but they are going to have to carry some minutes. They're going to have to carry some roles. They're going to have to be good in practice. That is essential because. I think Purdue this year talked up their scout team like they had the best scout team in the country. I think that, everybody says that, but usually it's BS. I think this year Purdue genuinely meant that. I think they really, really valued their guys in practice who helped the starters, get ready for games. I think the freshmen are going to have to play a pretty significant role in that this year. So all of those guys being ready to, be competitive every day and not have weeks where they're just terrible.
Yeah.
That's a big ask for freshmen. It was it's still pretty remarkable what Braden Smith and Fletcher Loyer did last year, in terms of just how ready they were and how they were able to sustain it, Obviously the end of the year for them didn't go great, but up until that point, they were, best case scenarios. They were consistent. They were, they were sturdy and reliable and steady. And I think Camden Heidi and Miles Coleman last year were, to a certain extent, were good. Camden Heidi wasn't necessarily a true freshman, but I think he was pretty steady all year. I think Colvin had his ups and downs, but it is really hard. I think people, don't realize on the outside how hard it is, to be a freshman playing at this level, to be playing against the sorts of schedules, Purdue has played, to play with people like Zach Edey and Braden Smith, who Braden Smith is a guy who is going to hold everyone the same standard he holds himself. And that can go a couple different ways on you. If you're ready, it's going to be the best thing in the world for you as a basketball player. If you're not ready, you're gonna have some tough days. And I think that's a good thing. And I think it's better than the older guys holding accepting mediocrity from the people around them, as opposed to demanding excellence from the people around them. I think that Purdue's leadership really comes to the forefront this year, in terms of Braden Smith, Lawyer, Trey Kaufman, Wren. I think you have really good leadership, potentially on this team, which is essential because for these guys to have, I'm just rambling at this point. This is just what I do. So you just kind of push the button on my back like Teddy
I
Ruxpin.
know, I
I just talk and talk and talk. When you look at the guys coming back, having been part of this Final Four run, that experience is something that those guys have to pass down to those who come after them. When you look at some of the places where Purdue went sideways, in the past, whether it was after the Robbie Hummel, Lewis Jackson, Ryan Smith class, after the 2014 class left, it was a situation where I think your leadership fell off. And I think you're pretty insulated from that now. Braden Smith is going to be an elite leader. I think Trey Kaufman Wren's going to be a great leader. Fletcher Lawyer is going to be a very good leader, things like that. And I think that's where this really matters. All of these freshmen coming in have to get indoctrinated by those older guys, starting as soon as they get here in terms of what's expected of them, what this program is now all about, what this program can consistently aspire to do on a fairly regular basis, and things like that. But, anytime you bring in six freshmen,
Yeah, you don't know.
it's a big part of your it's a big part of your future. So, from a sheer numbers perspective, those guys are going to be really important, short term and long term.
All right, we'll look forward to that storyline throughout the summer, but also obviously your
Which
coverage
one?
of,
I just hit like 15.
well, I know, but the most recent one, the fact that these guys are all going to be descending and you'll watching them here in the over the summer. But then, of course, obviously your coverage of in Indianapolis and Birmingham, right, the following week, and then maybe we'll have some stuff up from Fort Wayne as well, depending on how all that shakes out. So, all right, Brian, you have pontificated very well here,
How
and
many Teddy
we're gonna have things
Ruxpin
happen.
references have we had on this show over the years?
I don't know
Do you
what
remember
was
Teddy
your.
Ruxpin?
I only know the figure. I didn't don't know a lot about Teddy Ruxpin. What was
I was a kid, so perhaps this is more my childhood than yours. Maybe you bought one
Yes.
for your kids back in the
No.
day, but it was this teddy bear, this
Yeah.
animatronic teddy bear, where it had like X number of sayings programmed into it. You
Yeah.
pull a little string on its back and it would say
Yeah.
something. Its mouth would move very creepily.
It's very creepy.
Was kind of like the Hall of Presidents at Disney. But no, I didn't know if that was at first on our Saturday simulcast in terms of Teddy Ruxpin being referenced. If you're
Well,
one
it
of our
is
younger
now.
viewers, Google it. It's hilarious.
Well, and it will get talked about, I'm sure. So,
It's Ruxpin, Teddy Ruxpin. Google it.
right. Yeah. And he, I don't know why I always thought Teddy Ruxpin and Chucky were they're kind of combined. They weren't, but it made
Very
me
similar.
nervous.
If you gave Teddy Ruxpin a knife, there's no doubt in my mind it was very capable of sprees of murderous rage.
Yeah, I think you're right. All right. On that note, put an end to this. We want to thank our sponsor, the Union Club Hotel. We have information also on how you can join us, a special for YouTube subscribers too. If you're interested in our YouTube followers, you can follow us, you can like us, you can do all that, but you can also get via subscribers. Brian, we'll try to remember to tell folks that. It's a good idea to become a member of goldenblack.com, and there's a special offer to do that
if
as
you
well.
Are degenerate enough to have watched this nonsense
yeah,
for
I
the
know,
last
you're
half an hour,
perfect.
you're right up our alley, because
Yep.
you are sick.
Yeah, you're perfect. All right, thank the Union Club Hotel. We'll be back next week, or I think next week we'll try this again. And there'll be more to talk about. We'll probably get Tom Dienar back also to kind of continue to break down some football stuff too. So have a great week, rest of your weekend, everybody. Thanks for watching and or listening, or doing both. If you're really lonely, you did that. But we
Hey,
appreciate that
now.
very much. No, well, I'm just saying, if you watched and listened, if you watch, you shouldn't have to listen, right? Is that true? Do you buy that theory?
No, you said something about people being lonely.
Well,
What's
lonely
wrong
if
with
you
people
did.
being alone?
Well, doing both, if you had to watch and listen, that's it. I'm as lonely as the next person. So that's how that works. All right, we'll put an end to this thing. We're
All
going to
right, let's
kill this.
stop insulting our viewers.
Yeah, we don't want to do that, but we thank our viewers and our subscribers, and become a member of goldenblack.com while you're at it. We appreciate you too. So thanks so much, and have a great weekend, all.